Well, good afternoon and welcome to a rather special edition of Who Cares Wins Radio. You may have noticed by now that it's not Jan and it's not Angela, it's Martin Fever. I've been very kindly asked to come in and do the show today for them. I'm very excited and I know they're doing exciting things all around the country at the moment as well. And I'm very, very pleased to be here because this is a show all about health and well-being and looking after yourself. Subjects that are very close to my heart, actually. I'm loving it. I'm really loving it. I'm very excited, as you can tell. And we've got a packed show for you this afternoon. I've got a special guest that I'm going to be introducing in a little while. And later on, we're going to be talking about creating space in your life. So if you're one of these people that finds time a bit of a pressure, or you find that time seems to escape you, or you'd like to know some ways of creating a bit more time in your life, stay tuned because we're going to be looking at that later on. And also, if you're someone that's actually living with as a carer perhaps, or you visit people in care homes, the special guest this afternoon is going to be a fantastic lady for you to listen to. And she's going to be talking about dementia and how music and lots of different approaches to working with people with dementia and Alzheimer's disease and perhaps some other diseases as well, if you like. She's going to be talking about those later on. And very, very excited to welcome her. And, well, let's get on with it. Let's actually welcome the amazing Jill Keating. I've known Jill for a number of years now and has got an amazing story to share with you this afternoon, and also to tell you, as I say, about how she works in care homes as well. But that enough of this. Jill, let's get you on board. Welcome to Who Cares Wins Radio.
Hello, Martin. It's lovely to be here today. And thank you for inviting me. And hello to all the listeners as well.
You're very welcome indeed. And I've got lots of notes about you. Absolutely tons and tons of notes, because you've had a rich and varied career. And rather than me read everything out, why don't you start to tell the listeners a little bit about what's led you to this point?
Well, it's been quite a long journey, actually, Martin.
No. Trick of the light, it really
how
is.
Long have we got? Yes, absolutely. Well, I've always been involved in music one way or the other. I come from a musical family. My father, John Keating, or Johnny Keating, as some people may know, was a big band arranger and a composer, and was sort of very well known, Scottish. It's done arrangements for people like Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
Yeah, all these people. And so from a very, very early age, I had music all around me, and I've always had a huge passion for music and love what music can do. When I was around about 8 years old, we actually moved to California, where my father was writing for films over there, and we lived in Hollywood for a few years. So it's been quite a varied musical start, really, you know, for travelling and so on.
So moving from, where were you before Hollywood?
In Scotland.
Wow.
It was a really interesting start, actually, because I was brought up by my grandparents early on, as my father was travelling a lot with his job. And so I was brought up in Edinburgh, in a very poor part of Edinburgh called Bingham. And then, of course, we were whisked off to Hollywood, where my father was making music for film scores. And there we were, sandwiched between, you know, the Jacksons and Dick Van Dyke, and all. It's quite a contrast from three-legged dogs and one eye in Edinburgh, you know, to Hollywood with them swimming pool. Quite a contrast.
So. My goodness, and that was when you were 8 years old. So
absolutely.
I mean, that must have been quite a culture shock.
Well, it was, and of course, I had a really strong Scottish accent then, and I remember being in the school playground. And all these kids making a circle around me and pointing and asking me to speak. So I think I lost my Scottish accent in about 1 week flat. And then came back. When I came back, I had an American accent then. You know, as kids do, you adapt, don't you, to everything around
so
you.
So how long were you out there for?
We're out there for about a year and a half, 2 years.
Wow. And would we know any of the movies that your dad, Johnny Keating, actually scored for?
Well, one that's particularly dear to my heart, he was actually writing when we were there, because it takes a long time to write a music score, you know.
Right.
And he was writing the film music at that time for a film called Hotel.
Right.
Which you may remember was actually a miniseries over here, Hotel. I think it was one of those shows like Love Boat, but it was Hotel.
Oh, know? Okay.
I love Hotel, not quite. And so he was writing the score for that when we were there. So we used to sit and listen to him writing the music on the piano, and then you'd have the musicians round, and he did the whole score for that. And then, of course, we went to the studio and listened to him recording it.
I've got to ask, any famous people, who did you meet?
when we were there were lots of famous people, actually. Yeah, we did a lot of famous people coming to the house. But we had Carmen McRae come to the house. So if any jazz lovers are listening, she's an absolutely phenomenal jazz singer who was very, very big at the time. She came because she did the original version of that song, Hotel, in the movie. And, of course, we had lots of famous people coming over to the house, producers mainly of the film and things like that. So, but in London, we met a lot of famous people, too. You also had people popping in, you know. Like Anita Harris. Do you remember Anita Harris?
Yes, yeah. I do remember, yeah. So after America, what then? What happened after America?
Well, we came back then, and in fact at the age of 16, or was it 15, we formed a family band.
What, the Jacksons?
The Keatings.
Okay.
Along the same lines, Martin. It was the fashion then, you know, because we had the Partridge Family, the Osmond, you know, and we were the Keatings. And I was playing bass guitar and singing in the band with my brothers and the family. So we started playing around London in the pubs. We were an Irish band at that time because our roots are Irish-Scottish. So we played all around the pubs and around in London and the dance halls. So for many years we did that. And then went off to the Middle East to play, long before the Dubai and the Sharjah that everybody knows now, you know, before these big hotels, before they found water, actually.
My goodness.
Water hadn't been invented.
Well, so you're now 16, you're travelling around the world and you're living this lifestyle. How was that in terms of, you know, working with your family and being in those sorts of circumstances? How was that?
Well, it was great, actually, because at the age of 16, to be going to Dubai could be quite a threatening, you know, kind of thing. And in fact, I remember the first night that we got to, it was Dubai or Abu Dhabi, and I remember being in the hotel, and I was in this room on my own, and I could hear this man singing on my balcony. And, you know, I'd heard all sorts of stories that I was going to be kidnapped and everything, you know, blonde and 16. And I thought, oh, no, there's a man on my balcony. He's going to take me away. And, oh, of course, I woke up in the morning and realised it was the mosque that was actually outside the window.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a man. So it was quite a culture shock. But it was a great experience, fantastic experience to travel with the family and have the safety of the family, but be doing something that I really love doing.
So what was your sort of style of music? I mean, you talked about the Partridge Family. What was your style of music then?
Well, we used to write our own songs. We used to do a lot of our own material. But it's always been jazz, soul-based, really. It's always come from those roots, because that's the roots that we listened to, and it was with my father. So influences like Stevie Wonder, Aretha Franklin, and the pop songs of the day as well.
So you're now touring. What's next? What happens next in this story?
Next, after we left the Middle East,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, from there we could go anywhere, couldn't we? But we were in the Middle East for quite a long time. We were all around Europe and the Middle East for about 6 years performing.
Now, I've a little Dickie Bird has actually told me that there's you were in. I think you've been on TV. Is that right? You were on TV. What was that band? Just briefly. Come on, this is.
Which band are you talking about?
Well, I know I've seen pictures of you because I looked at all your publicity and I've seen pictures of you. So what was that? How did you get into the bigger areas of showbiz?
Well, we did lots of television over the years, actually, and mainly abroad. It was mainly abroad. We did some in England as well. We did Summertime Special and all of those kind of things years ago.
So you're moving on there. So let's bring things a little bit forward. Tell me about your father, because he's had a huge influence in your life and your music as well. Give me a bit of background, because I know we're going to be talking about the work that you're doing now, if you like, past the work, because you still perform, of course, but it's actually the work that you're doing now that really I think is of very much interest to our listeners as well this afternoon, because it's about working with people in care homes. So tell me a little bit about how that started for you.
That's all come about. Well, for many years, I've been a jazz singer and I've been doing some regular kind of gigs and so on. And then I decided one day, actually, that what I wanted to do is I wanted to record an album using the arrangements, the big band arrangements that my father had done for various artists.
Right.
Because he'd done these incredible arrangements, big band swing arrangements, and he used a 28-piece band, whereas a lot of the big bands were 16-piece. He wanted to add in the other instruments that he heard. So he'd add in a tuba where necessary, he'd add in marimbas, you know, whatever he felt the song needed. And he did these spectacular arrangements. He did Smile for Sammy Davis Jr. and he did The Very Thought of You for Tony Bennett and that kind of thing. And I thought, well, I'd like to do an album of his arrangements, note for note, with me singing on the top, which was no mean feat, I can tell you, because we didn't have any of the scores. And at the time I decided to do this album, which was going to be a tribute to my dad, but also a pleasure for me to do, we started to notice that my father was beginning to Lucy's memory, and that things were starting to happen that we didn't know what they were at the time.
Most upsetting.
It was really upsetting. And so I started to organise the album and make the album before this happened. So he knew what I was doing and he was very much up for it. And he helped me a lot with it. But as he started to get the dementia, I found it incredibly helpful, because when I used to go over to see him, you know, it was very difficult to know what to do actually with him at this point. I had no experience of anything like this. And it was very helpful that he, you know, we would sit down together, he'd get on the piano and he'd play the songs for me and I'd sing and we'd practice them together. And it was just beautiful. It really gave us something to focus on when I went round there.
So it was almost like you were still able to connect with your father, even though he was perhaps slipping away in some respects.
Absolutely. We found a common bond very early on. And you know, at that stage, he was still very, very much aware of what was going on. And he was incredibly helpful to me. And it was great for him to have something to focus on, and great for me. It really was a great time.
And so once you're working with your father on this, the album's now taking shape. What was the next stage then? How did you decide that, you know, from the album, it seems quite a jump to where you're actually going to be working in care homes? Tell us a little bit about what happened there. What's the stages?
Well, originally he was diagnosed with Lewy body, which is
right.
A form of dementia.
Okay.
And he was at home with that, and we were looking after him at home. And that was increasingly difficult as well, because for anybody out there who's had any relatives with dementia or loved ones or anything, it's an incredibly difficult time when they're first diagnosed. Absolutely, because you don't know what's going on, and you don't know how to experience it or anything. So after a few years, actually, you know, we had to make the decision that he would have to go into a care home.
Right. Okay. So that was obviously a hard. I mean, any listener out there that knows that choice, that decision there. I want to just stop us there for a moment, because I know that you've actually got the album you recorded, which was really in a tribute to your father as well. We've got you singing one of the tracks from it as well, which is the track Hotel. You tell us a little bit about it at the end of it, but if we just listen to that now. And I would just explain, listeners, I've got my able assistant today, Paul, with us, and he's doing all the buttons and tweaks and everything else for me today. So over to you, Paul. Thank you.
Hotel here in the room we knew so well. I lie and stare now here where love was born. My eyes are wet, my heart is torn, the room is bare. Roses on the wall, laughter in the hall. Oh, as I recall, but where are you? Here in this hotel, how many stories could it tell of ghosts who dwell here? We have joined the cast, lovers in the past, in this hotel. I'll return again just to dream. Nothing in this hotel. In this hotel.
Well, welcome back. And Jill, that song means so much to you. I could see as we were sitting here and you were listening to it, it means so much to you. Why?
Well, I think because Dad was writing that, you know, when we were in America, first of all, it's one of my earliest childhood memories, was just sitting on the floor while he'd be, you know, writing the music for that. And whenever Dad was writing anything, it, you know, our house was quite intense. It was like, children do not speak. So, you know, we will be listening to him writing it, and you could hear it develop and so on. And so it's an early childhood memory, first and foremost. And that time in your life, you know, you're forming, aren't you, really? I mean, yeah, eight yeah. to 10, it's a time that does mean a lot. And it was quite an experience living over there. And then, of course, hearing it recorded. It was originally recorded by Carmen McRae, as I mentioned earlier, and it was absolutely beautiful. She sang a few songs on the album. And the whole score is absolutely wonderful, and I've seen the film. And it just means a lot to me. I think it's incredibly moving.
What a unique experience to have, and what a bond to have with your father there as well, especially, as you say, when you were working on the album and bringing it all together. That, I mean, he was there able to help you. Was he there right to the end? Was he able to help you right to the end of the album? Did he hear the album?
We've played it many, many times. You know, there's always some benefits to everything, and I've played it many, many times to my dad. He doesn't always remember that I've played it before, so it's quite nice. It's like fresh every time he listens to it. He was with me most of the way. I would say, I mean, all in all, it took about 3 years to make, because we had to write every note down. As I said, we didn't have the original scores. So probably for the first 2 years, he was very, very involved. And then the last year, I sort of put it together myself.
Now, I really want to tap into this for our listeners as well, is that, you know, they may have been experiencing similar circumstances. You know, they've had a loved one diagnosed with Alzheimer's or vascular dementia or any illness, actually, because it has a big impact on any of us when, you know, there's this health model where we have a belief and then an illness is diagnosed and then all of a sudden all those beliefs go out of the window. How did you cope? How did you manage with all of that? With, you know, producing an album, you've got your dad there. Your dad's not as well as he could be. He's perhaps sliding away. I don't know what the correct expression is. How did you manage? What did you do?
It's a really good question, Martin. It really is. As I said before, anyone that has had this experience, it's really quite a unique experience. To be with somebody who has been the rock of your life, or has been, you know, the stable in your life, an intelligent, witty, wonderful man, talented and creative, and to be sitting with him and him, you know, to be talking to photographs and be seeing things that don't exist in the room. I mean, it's really frightening and incredibly upsetting. And there was a moment when I thought, these roles are going to reverse now. You know, right. I'm going to be the parent. And it was incredibly painful and very difficult at the beginning. What I've realised with it is that, like everything else in life, it goes through stages. You know, the early stages, this is for the carers, I mean now in the family.
Right.
You know, it goes through all those different stages. It's incredibly difficult at first, and then you have to learn to manage it. And it was so, so painful. A very, very good friend of mine said to me early on, I mean, you know, we realised after about 6 months what was going to happen, and it was so upsetting. And she said to me, it's about letting go of the man you had and loving the one you've got.
And that's interesting, because I remember someone saying to me about dementia exactly the same, about loving the person in front of you rather than the memories of the person that you had in the past. I just want to mention to our listeners, if you want to get involved in this discussion this afternoon, well, you can tweet us in at CaresWins, so it's at CaresWins, and let us know your own experiences, your own thoughts about what we're talking about this afternoon, and let us know if you've been in a similar situation. Maybe there's something you could share with our listeners that would help them as well, if they're struggling a little bit today with the quite powerful issues that, you know, we just hear about a diagnosis and people tend to forget, but the implications are quite profound in all of our lives. So how did you do it, Jill? What was the thing that you think guided you through? If we could share that with our listeners.
Yeah, I think what I found early on was it's about getting into their world, you know, not expecting them to stay in ours, is to find a way to connecting directly one-to-one. You know, what is it that, you know, getting into their moment,
right,
and finding joy in that moment. it's not about, you know, telling them what you've been doing or what you're planning to do or this happened or that happened on the train. It's more about let's have a tea, let's have a cake, let's put a bit of music on, let's have a bit of fun together, let's go for a walk, you know, sharing that moment.
Which is actually, funnily enough, a good lesson for everyday life for all of us, is to stay in that moment, is rather than rush around with all these thoughts in our head and ticking boxes and rush, to actually stay in the moment and stick with it. And I'm very conscious of, we talk about this in a little while about space, about people that have, you know, to-do lists, they simply tick off and they're not ever present with any of them. And are you suggesting that you became much more present when you were with your father than you probably had been in the past?
Absolutely. And that is the only way you can be. You know, when I go to visit him and all the other residents now in the care home that he's in, for the hour or two that I'm there, I don't think about anything else. Actually, it does me good.
Right.
It really does me good. I mean, you know, we can sit in the garden, we look at the flowers, we can. It's just lovely, you know, it really is lovely. And I have noticed that it's about really, really getting a one-to-one contact with people. And you know, that's about as much, really, as you can do and as much as you can, they can take in.
So having experienced this with your father, you're now writing the album, you're in this position of writing the album. How did you go from that to now being somebody that works with music as a therapy in care homes? Because I know you still perform, professionally, different gigs and things like this, but how did you go from that to actually, you know, deciding to enter the world of care homes and all the challenges, if you like?
Well, it really came about because Dad was in one care home and then he was moved to another. I also had another relative in a care home as well. And every time I was visiting, I kind of realised that I wasn't really hearing much music in there, and they didn't seem to be doing an awful lot, except, you know, as a great job that they do in the care homes. A lot of the time, I used to go in, the residents would be in front of the television,
right,
and there'd be some programme on, you know, about the sort of heavy news or something, and I think, well, I don't even want to watch that, you know, and I felt... and I need to do something. And I thought, well, I'm a singer.
Right.
So I spoke to them and I volunteered. The first thing I did was I volunteered to do a concert.
So it's your love of music that you realised this was an element that you've always had, as you say, in your life all the time, was suddenly missing from the lives of the people you were seeing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I thought, I would love to do a concert here, primarily for my father, but obviously for, you know, for everybody. And so we did a summer concert early on last year in the garden, and I was absolutely, totally moved by what happened. But I was in the fortunate position, actually, because I go to that home so often that I knew a lot of the residents, and I'd seen them on a weekly basis, and I knew how they were, and I'd seen them and how they were. And I started the concert, and it was almost instantaneous. Within a few bars of the first song that I sang.
Wow, this is...
Yeah, it was as if you'd switched a light on. You know, the people just came alive, singing every word.
And these were songs, I'm assuming that the care home people aren't actually, you know, sort of teenagers. We're looking at an older age group. So did you choose your songs to match the people? How did you go about that?
Well, yes, I did put a programme together that I thought that they would like. Fortunately, a lot of the jazz numbers I do are standard numbers anyway. Like It's Only a Paper Moon, Let's Fall in Love, you know, several songs like that. And I, you know, I realise actually that's the kind of music they love anyway, and that sort of age group. The age group is somewhere between 70 and 90,
right?
In that particular concert. But there were actually younger people there too, had come from other floors. So I just did a set, but I was absolutely fascinated by it because, you know, it was just the way that they came to life so quickly, and were singing every note with me, and they were tapping their feet, they had their arms in the air, they were totally engaged, they were present.
So these were people that, what were they like normally? Were these people sort of communicating regularly, or is this just something that triggered a memory or something? What was going on there?
It seems that the power of music is quite magical. I've done a lot of studying on this now, a lot of reading about it. The effects of music are quite magical. It seems to reach parts of the brain that nothing else can reach. And it was explained to me a little bit like if someone's had a stroke or they've had some brain damage on one side of the brain, let's say, that will affect or directly whatever that affects, right. And that won't work well anymore. Whereas music covers all centres. So your cognitive centre, your emotional centre, it covers everything. So what happens is, it's a bit like how I've put into my thinking, is a bit like an aeroplane. You know, if you've got four engines on a plane and one goes down, you've still got three.
Right.
That's how I kind of see it. So music, and it's also one of the first things we ever, apparently, that's the first thing that comes into our life is speech and sound. As I'm sure you know about that, speech and sound comes into your life first. It's also the last thing to go.
Wow.
The other reason is that music, it comes in like a little package. So they say, with the words and the music are connected together, so they remember it as a unit, as opposed to if I just sang the words for, say, Let's Smile, the Charlie Chaplin song, without the music, they may not remember those lyrics. But when they hear the music, they know the lyric. It's all still there.
It reminds me, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Awakening, where all of a sudden Robin Williams, I think, is the lead actor, and he actually discovers that these people are experiencing, if you like, severe tremors, and then suddenly they use music, and they use it. So that's another example of this music actually reaching those parts that we... So is it, I mean, the sensation of you actually having that ability, I mean, what were the results at the end of it? I mean, how long did the concert last?
The concert was an hour.
Right.
And I was just in bits, basically. I mean, I was in such a state. It was such a beautiful, beautiful experience for me. And there was a story that I would definitely like to tell you about that.
Okay. Well, before you do that, I want to play another tune, actually. You'll tell us a little bit about it in a moment. And this is Lovely Day by Bill Withers.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes. Something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Instead of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Yeah.
Channel Radio.
Hello there. Well, welcome back again, Ed. We'll hear about that song in a moment, but my producer, Paul, has got some tweets that we've got in there. I have to explain, listeners, I don't have access to the tweets, so it's his domain here. So
it's all mine.
It's all yours.
It's all mine, and I have total control over the Twitter. Good afternoon, folks. We've got some interesting tweets coming in based on what Jill was just talking about. How about this for a first tweet? Lost in confusion. Well, I'll tell them there's no problem, there's only solutions. And that was sent in by Great Rock Lyrics, and it's a lyric from John Lennon.
Mm, wow.
So,
lovely.
Absolutely. How apposite was that?
Fantastic, yes.
Greenleaf ergonomics, very interesting topic. Thank you for sharing that with us, Jill. Fascinating stuff. B2B Southeast, listening to a very interesting discussion about dementia on Channel Radio, Who Cares Wins. And Mike Waterton, your perception is your reality. Nothing else matters. You truly are what you think.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for those tweets. Keep them coming in, folks, because it makes a difference to us as well. And Jill, tell us about that song, Lovely Day, because that's, I could see you jigging around and dancing and desperately wanted to sing it as well.
So. Absolutely, absolutely. How can you not sing it? I just believe that, as I said before, the power of music. I mean, dementia or not, or, you know, whatever, any of us that put, I mean, I know that if I walk out the house, whatever mood I'm in, as soon as I put my iPod on, or whatever device I'm using, I put it on, and within a couple of bars, I'm happy. That particular song also means a lot to me. It's one of those songs that I've just never, ever got bored with. Doesn't matter how many times I listen to it.
Me too. I love it.
I just find it so uplifting. It's simple. And I remember I was on a course once, a drama course once, and I think the teacher said, always have a song in your heart. Pick a song that you can have in your heart. So whether you're going for a job interview, whether you're going on a date, you know, whatever you're going to do, as you're going to that place, have a song in your heart, that song that cheers you up. You don't even have to listen to it, you just have to have it in your heart. And so Lovely Day for me is that song. And the other thing I think about it, often we think about these songs about love, you know, we think it's about love, it's got to be about a partner. But I actually think with those kind of lyrics, it can be anything. That could be anything that you believe. You have spiritual beliefs, you have religious beliefs, it can be that, it can be your pet.
What it comes down, actually, what you're saying about a song in your heart is very important, because, you know, we have these intentions all the time in our lives and people just aren't conscious of them. And if you consciously choose a song in your heart, I love that expression, I'm going to nick that and use that in all my work, I think. But when you've got a song in your heart, it's amazing the difference. I mean, have you ever noticed that? I know when I get in my car sometimes and put the song on the radio, that song stays with me for the day. It does, and people get fed up with it. If it's the right song, you don't. And I wonder, maybe that's something that our listeners could tweet in, is what would be their song in their hearts for today or for anything that they're doing, actually. You know, if you've got a job interview, if you're about to go and meet someone, if you're going for tea or coffee, even if you're at work, whatever you're doing, what would be the song in your heart at this moment? So, Jill, you've got to a stage where you're now at the home. You volunteer to do this. When did you decide? What made you decide? What was the fact, if you like, in terms of you going, this is what I'm going to be doing?
That's what I want to do. I was very fortunate when I did that concert, because the home that I was working in had just appointed a new director.
Right.
And he was watching. And he called me in for a meeting and he said, you know, I really liked what you did. He could see the effect it had on the residents. And he said, we'd like you to do this on a regular basis. So that's how I kind of started. And we arranged that I would do a concert every second month in that particular home.
Right.
I then went on to create workshops, interactive workshops, which I've done before, but hadn't done them in that situation, where I get the residents to, they're singing workshops where they interact with me. And that's also been incredible. Because that incorporates everything, you know. They sing, so when we start the workshop, they're breathing, it's getting everything moving. I have a big, huge balloon that I pass around, and then they introduce themselves and they pass it on to the next person. Of course, the balloon flies around, so they have to kick it. They have to use their arms, so they're getting physical exercise as well. And it's just really good for getting everything going. And then we sing songs. So that's kind of how I started. And of course, now I've got completely passionate about it. And the story I wanted to tell you just before the song came on, there's a lovely couple that are there, and it's the woman that has the dementia, and they're Spanish. And I mentioned to her husband that I was going to come in to do a workshop that Friday. And he said, oh, but, you know, she wouldn't be able to, she won't respond. And with my belief in music and how powerful music actually is, I thought, well, look, I'd really like her to come anyway. So he said, okay, fine. So she came up to the workshop. Fair enough, for the first sort of 10 minutes, she was sort of lying down. and had her eyes closed, and I thought she wasn't really responding. But you never know what they're listening to. You know, we cannot say how they're benefiting.
Yes, yeah, that danger zone of assuming and presuming for other people, yeah. Yes.
Just because they don't react in big movements or in a big way that we would doesn't mean that they're not really benefiting from it.
Right.
But I thought, and it just sort of came naturally, actually. I thought, I'm going to go up to her. And what I often do with the residents, I go right up to them, I look in their eyes, and I sing to them directly. And I might even use their name, if I know their name. In this particular case, I was singing Que Sera Sera, which is the most popular song in care homes. It's absolutely wonderful. Everybody loves it. I love it.
Okay, right.
And I can pretend to be Doris Day. I mean, it's just absolutely the best, you know what I mean? So I thought, I'll sing Que Sera Sera. And I went up to her, just naturally in the chorus, and I went quite near to her ear, and she'd been her eyes closed. And I started, "Hey, Sarah, Sarah." And she turned round, she opened her eyes, looked directly in my eyes, she gave me the biggest smile, and the tears came down her eyes. And I tell you what, in that moment, that was it for me. And I thought, if one line of one song can touch you like that, why are they not having that all the time? Why are we not having music all the time in some shape or form?
My goodness, I've got goosebumps. I've got goosebumps on that. It's an amazing story. That's
actually what happened. And because it was her language, it was a song she recognised, because she had the personal contact with me being so close. And it was absolutely moving. And I've got goosebumps telling you, and that's how it was. And I get that kind of reaction all the time. And I think they do respond. We all respond to music.
So you've... This is amazing. What a lovely story there. So how did you take it from there? I mean, you said this is something that you want care homes to really be involved with. And I know there's a bit more music coming into them, and people have moved away from, in some care homes, they have moved away from people sitting around and watching TV all day and being more stimulated. How did you take it, or where are you taking it to now? What's happening now in care homes?
Well, I think the benefit of music now is becoming quite well known.
Right.
There's been a lot of talk about it recently in the papers and on radio stations and so on, and I think we're all beginning to realise that how beneficial music actually is. So since I've been working with these particular care homes, I've got quite a lot of care homes that I go into now. And, I mean, how I would like to see it is to go to have music as the fabric of being in a care home.
Right, so it sort of goes through everything.
Yeah, just in the way that we have music with everything. You know, we've got the radio on in the background. We might go into a lift. We might go to a restaurant. There's music. We might sing in a church. Whatever it is, you know, we are surrounded by music all the time, even when we're not aware of it. Even birdsong. You know, there's always some form of music in our life. And I would really love to see, you know, to go into care homes where you have a program of music, an annual program divided into months, where there's all sorts of things, like watching a film that's a musical and they sing along to, say, The Sound of Music, The West Side Story, classical appreciation, maybe country music, you know, whatever, to have it on a regular basis.
So it sounds almost like, you know, you're almost, dare I say, the Jamie Oliver. You know how Jamie Oliver was trying to change the food of the nation? It's almost like you're determined now. You're very passionate. I can see that as you're talking to me. You're very passionate about getting music accepted into care homes. What's the challenge? What's the challenge for you to get that to a stage where you could go into any care home in the UK and overseas and see that happening? What's the challenges for you?
I think the challenge is that in a lot of the care homes and nursing homes, it's about their basic needs, which of course is understandable, and that has to be taken care of first. And they do an amazing job, there's no question about that. But what about the quality of life? You know, more increasingly, we're all going to be, you know, so many people are going to end up in care homes. I mean, that's the way it is, you know. They need to improve. They need to change their way of thinking. They need to have new initiatives. And I think that... The challenge is not seeing it as entertainment, that somebody comes in with their, you know, with their little machine and backing track and just sing a song once a month. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about them having quality of life and having, you know, we all love it. We all love to go to the theatre. We all love entertainment. We all love to do something different. We don't just want to eat, sleep and be looked after. Of course, that's what we need. Our basic needs are the most important. But on top of that, I feel that if we want quality of life, this is one of the ways that we can do it.
Now, we're speaking this afternoon to our listeners, and obviously some of them will be caring for people who have had a sudden illness or a diagnosis or a big change in their lives as a result of illness or disease. And you're talking about care homes. I want to play some more music now, and I want to play a track by yourself here, all right? Because I want people to know what you sound like, because you've got an amazing voice. I'd like you to think about, if you could, and when we come back, is actually, what could people do if they're at home looking after someone today? Okay, great. So over to you, Paul, please.
Look at you and suddenly something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me. It's that old devil moon that you stole from the sky. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. You and your glance make this romance too hot to handle. Stars in the night blazing their light can't hold a candle to your razzle dazzle. You got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. Wanna cry, wanna croon, wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm free as a dove, old devil moon deep in your eyes blinds me with love. You stole from the sky. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. You and your glance make this romance too hot to handle. Stars in the night blazing their light can't hold a candle to your razzle dazzle. You got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. Wanna cry, wanna croon, wanna lay up like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm free as a dove, oh devil moon deep in your eyes blinds me with love.
There, thank you very much. And that was the lovely Miss Jill Keating playing Old Devil Moon.
Yeah, thank you, Martin.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Okay, so we were talking before the record really about we've talked about care homes so far, and obviously people sometimes with a care home they tend to allow the care home to take over, and obviously that's not what you're advocating. You're advocating people can do more, if you like, for people as well in care homes. We were talking about what can happen with people if they're in a caring situation at home, mm-hmm. or perhaps they're going to see, not necessarily an older person, because, you know, brain injury, diagnosis of different illnesses happens at any age. What can you do, Jill? What can you do, you know, if you're going to say to somebody that comes to you and says, I don't know what to do, how can I help? What's your suggestions?
Well, I think there's nobody better to help than a relative or a person that's very close,
right.
You know, because they know the person better than anybody else. I would suggest, you know, maybe downloading or putting together some music that they know that the person would have liked.
And does the music have to be the music they would have liked? It doesn't have to, because we've talked about recollections mm-hmm. at the moment, but that seems to suggest, you know, like bringing something back from when they were like in their 20s or stuff. Does it have to be like that, or can it be whatever they like?
I think a nice mixture of music, actually. I think they can have something from, you know, it's good to remember the kind of music that would have been around when they were, say, between 18 and, say, 25 or something like that, because that's the music that we really remember.
Right, yeah.
Maybe that kind of era of anything. But also they've done the studies really on one of the things that we, the first thing that we identify with music is actually the rhythm.
Right.
That's
okay.
fundamentally human, that we, you know, we identify with the rhythm. So if it's Latin music can be great, you know, anything with a good rhythm. And of course, the best way of all really is if you can get them to interact with you.
Right.
So maybe singing. I mean, if anybody likes singing, I mean, you know, you can just sing a few tunes. You don't even have to have music. You just sing songs that they like with them. But play music on a regular basis with them.
I know, having worked with clients with Parkinson's disease, that, you know, singing is actually a fundamental part of living with Parkinson's. You know, I had the first advice that I was ever given when I worked with somebody with Parkinson's and I contacted the Parkinson's Society was they actually said, get the people to join a choir, so anybody that comes along, because it's more than, as you've said before, it's about the physicality of singing as well. So we're not simply talking, are we, about the cerebral sort of the mindset. We're talking about the physical elements as well.
Yes.
And as soon as, of course, we move, we produce all these great chemicals, the serotonins, the endorphins, and these sorts of things as well. And all these actually happen and move us forward. So the singing is one element. And you mentioned to me before about actually not just interacting with singing, but almost playing instruments as well, or doing something physical regarding the...
Well, absolutely. I mean, the main benefits actually come from when you interact together. So if you could have a little drum or any you know, tambourine or any instruments you could have, or if somebody played piano when they were younger, or guitar or whatever, you know, see what they can do, get them to play.
Now, one of the things I know about the way you work is that you actually work with the person and don't actually patronise the person, and that seems to me a very important element of what you're trying to do here, is you're actually trying to get somebody to work with in the present moment, not talking down to, not patronising. How difficult is that when you're faced with somebody that you love and care for, like with your father, for example? How difficult is it knowing that they have this wealth of knowledge? How do you manage that?
I don't find it that difficult, actually, especially with my father, because I know him very, very well, and I know,
right.
And I can see how he's going to react. And I think that's the thing. It's a trial and error, isn't it? You trial and error. Try little different things. And the thing about doing all this, it's really good for the carers as well, and for people that are taking care, because sometimes the difficulty is, what do you do? What do you actually do with each other?
Yeah, good point. Very good point. And then, Paul, we've got another tweet, or you?
Yeah, we have. No, we got a tweet here from Music for Change, which is a small charity in Canterbury, and they were saying, based on what you were saying before, we played the last track, Jill, that the effect that music has on people, and their whole rationale is to take music into schools, the community, and various places, and to have an impact using music. So, absolutely, reinforcing exactly what you were
exactly.
saying.
Yes, and at the end of the day, of course, let's not forget that it's actually fun.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, it's all about having fun.
Oh, are we allowed to have fun?
Well, I don't know about that, honestly. So. But I think that's one of the things, that it's an incredibly stressful time for people. And I think that notion of fun may well disappear because, you know, suddenly you're looking after someone's needs. You're now, you know, having to provide. Maybe they were providing for you. You're now providing for them. You're now looking after them. You probably don't have much time to yourself. And fun can sometimes go out of the window.
Absolutely.
And it seems to me, you know, like we're all joking aside, that fun is an important element of the work that you're doing, because I happen to know, I know you've got some videos on your Facebook page as well, but I happen to know that when you are performing, your patients in a care home aren't sitting passively taking on board what you're doing. They are involved, aren't they?
Because you absolutely.
What sort of things, you know, if we're talking about someone at home that we could get them involved as well, what sort of things could they be doing for the people they're caring for, or what could they be doing?
Well, when I'm doing a concert, whatever, I mean, obviously, I give them all instruments for a start. I have maracas, so they can join in that way. They can join in with playing. I have a microphone, so I go around and they all sing with me. Or I just, in fact, the other day I was just with somebody and I put on my tablet and I asked them what songs they'd like to play, and we played them and we just sat and sang them together. It was very simple.
Now, we've talked about this all being in the moment. We all know that finances are tight in many walks of life at the moment. What happens after you go? What actually happens? What are the benefits after your concerts? What are the benefits for people who've been introduced to this music? What happens then? Have you noticed? I mean, I know you go back to some homes. What have you noticed? What changes?
Well, I've noticed is that they remember. They do remember that I've been in, and some of the work that I do, they actually remember. Sometimes I do a Doe a Deer. you know, the song from The Sound of Music.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And recently I went back to one particular care home and I divide the room. So we do the Do A Deer all together and then we do long notes. And we divided the room up. And the difference the second time that I went in, the volume that they were singing. So they are remembering some of what I've already taught them. And also from the people that run the home, I've heard, you know, after the concert, they've said they really enjoyed it. And they've sometimes talked about it for a few days afterwards.
Well, so it's actually not just even for the concert itself. It's not just for the moment. It's actually the long-term benefits that you're getting from it as well.
And of course, it's a stress reliever as well.
Yes, so because of the physicality as well and the remembering as well. What do you think would be your number one thing that you would like to say to every care home boss, owner, whoever it is? What would you like to be saying to them this afternoon if you could communicate with them all? Because Channel Radio goes everywhere, we know that. Okay, we were talking about that earlier. What would you like to say?
Music, music, music.
Sounds good to me. It sounds very good to me indeed. I just want to briefly talk about a few things here. Jill, thank you for that. That's such a wonderful insight. And thank you for your time and coming along. But you're not going anywhere because you're going to help me with the next part as well today. And I just want to talk about this concept of space in our lives, because we live in a very time-pressured society and it can be very difficult to find time for ourselves. And one of the things that I'm very keen on is when I work with clients, and for those of you who don't know me, I'm actually a coach that works with men, and I really am very keen on helping everybody unlock their power to actually being the people they want to be in their lives, if you like. And one of the things I'm very keen on is space in our lives. And how the benefits of space, time and time again, come up. You know, space allows us to reflect, allows us to thrive, to grow. And of course, that's the biggest shortage we have, is because most of us are so busy doing other things. How, Jill, do you create space in your life?
Actually, on a morning basis, I like to have a half an hour when I first get up that is just for me.
Right.
I tend to do some form of meditation. Yeah. That time, just to get centered. I find if I don't center myself in the morning, my life can be like a spinning top. It can just go off on its own, you know, and I get busy and I get onto the computer and so on. So it's very, very important for me to try and center myself and ground myself on a daily basis.
Right. And well, actually, that's something I work with my clients. We talk about a thing called a golden start, which is something you do first thing in the mornings that is simply for you. And that's very difficult for some people, because a lot of people spend their lives people pleasing. They get up and the first thing they're doing is, what can I do for someone else? And you know, it's that old adage that when you're on an aeroplane and they give you a safety announcement, the first thing they talk about is actually looking after yourself first. Put your own oxygen mask on. And that can be very difficult for some people, particularly mothers and carers. We've talked about carers today as well there. And I think it's incredibly important. I also want people to not run away with the idea that when you're looking for time for yourself, that it actually has to be something like physical or meditative or all of these types of things. It's something you actually enjoy for yourself. It could be listening to your favourite music, which we've talked about the power of music today. I know one client takes an extra long shower, so that's one of the things that he does. But I just want people, the listeners today, to maybe have a think about how they can create space in their lives. And we could have talked about this, but I think you really, Jill, your story had to take priority today. And I'll be back, I'm sure, to talk about space another day. I've got a couple of announcements I've got to make here as well. And as I say, I'm taking the show today for Angela and Jan, and a couple of things here they've asked me to mention. Perhaps very importantly is that on the 6th of September, there's a talk about breath for wellbeing in Canterbury, and the details are actually on the Who Cares Wins Radio website. And there's a talk again on the 26th in Canterbury, which is all about yoga for hypertension. And that's being run by a lady called Louisa. And then if you want to hear Louisa speak, there's an open day on Saturday the 20th of September, which is all about, let me have a look here. She'll be speaking on the topic of breath, which is breathe better and live better. And perhaps the most important one here today from Angela, who's not able to be here, is I know she's been training and I know she's been injured and she's now booked back to full fitness, that on Sunday the 7th of September, she's taking part in the Great North Run in Newcastle. And obviously sponsorship is welcome. But what she's more very keen on, if you like, is interviewing people who are actually doing the run. So if you see her, and she'll have a T-shirt on, if you go to the website, you can see that as well. She'll actually be, if you like, running around asking people what they're doing, why they're doing the Great North Run as well. So she wants to have a tap on the shoulder if they wish to chat with her, and they might be in the radio as well. They'll be going out on the 8th of September, the interview's there. And just to remind you that the show changes when it comes back on the 15th to being a noonday show. Now, Jill, we've got just enough time, I think, to listen to one of your last songs, which is Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. Just briefly tell us why.
I think the lyric is just so beautiful of this song. And again, it's uplifting and... what can you say? It's wonderful. It's a wonderful song.
Well, thank you everyone for listening this afternoon. And tweet away, please. We're still going to be here listening to your tweets. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Martin.
I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Much more than I ever knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful.
Help me show my load.